today? No. Because I'm going to get him.
Gentlemen, to this Friday edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We're broadcasting live from Northwest Pennsylvania, and we do each and every weeknight, 7 to 10 p.m. on Global Star Radio Network. Our video is also live on YouTube, and we stream also on Blog Talk Radio Network. I want to thank each and every one of you guys for joining us tonight. We got a great show lined up for you. HagmanReport.com is our website for news and information, as well as HagmanandHagman.com. For show information, and make sure you check HagmanReport.com daily. Again, we have a fantastic show for you tonight. Portions of tonight's program is brought to you by Holtones. Holtones.com is the website. HoltonesLive.com is the website. HoltonesLive.com. It's a fantastic product, and it's about music that is at a specific frequency that can help you. From healing to help you sleep and help your mind. In this segment, this first segment, we got Colonel Sargis Sangari from UnitedAssyrianAppeal.org. He's been a guest several times in the past, and just recently we're going to get into what is happening between the U.S. and Syria, from the gas attack to the response, the tactical missile strike yesterday on the Syrian airfield, and there's been some conflicting reports about that, but we know two things. One, that the globalists and the warmongers have blamed Assad for this latest gas attack. And yesterday in the first segment, we talked about some of the different responses from people who had opposing views in a timeline. And we talked about controlling the narrative. And then at the last hour of the show last night, we only got to mention what was going on as we were joined by a guest. But Mr. Sangari's here, and we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on in Syria, the strategy behind what has happened, and where we might go from here. Mr. Sangari, welcome back to the Hagman Report.
It's good to be back, guys.
It's great to have you. Since the last time you've been on, there's been a few changes that have happened here. And yesterday we laid this out about the gas attack. On March 30th, the U.S. ambassador to the U.N. said that we were not going to go for a regime change in Syria. Then Rex Tillerson, a few days after that, backed up that claim, saying they're not going to try to oust Assad when trying to bring a peaceful end to the Syrian civil war. And then, boom, on the 4th of April, there was a gas attack, and they turned around and immediately blamed Assad. And for whatever reason, whether it's somebody talking in Trump's ear, I believe it was more a political maneuver for Trump rather than a revenge or it was a message Trump was sending not only to Syria but the world and to his critics here in the U.S. And I think it was kind of strategic. But there's been a lot of backlash as Trump ran on a non-interventionist platform. He's not going to get involved, and it kind of went against everything that he criticized Obama for in 2013 and what he ran on in his campaign. Mr. Sangari, what do you have to make of these events that have just transpired?
I think they're heading in a positive for the United States from a strategic standpoint. I know it's just a tactical strike, but if you want to tie it to the narrative of what happened prior to the chemical attack and then with the strike taking place, I think you see that the stars basically aligned in the right direction. You have the President of Jordan coming to United States, President of Egypt coming to United States. Both countries are very good friends of Israel. They both have recognized Israel's right to exist. At the same time as they come, you see that the President of China is going to arrive here. And in the process of him arriving, with China expanding in Asia, with the Russians, as I was just 3 weeks ago, we were talking, and I said, I don't know what the plan is for Syria, because although we've introduced our Marines in the East, Russia still wins at the end. You know, Russia's going to get its pick of who's going to be the replacement for Assad, if Assad has to be replaced, and they're not engaged in the combat operations. The U.S. is kind of outside the table when it comes to negotiations, so we're not negotiating from a position of strength. And what happens is now you have the major countries that are there securing our footprint, Israel being a strategic in-depth partner for United States, Jordan being a very good partner, with ties to Egypt and Israel. Egypt itself finally reconfirming its relationship with Israel and United States in the meetings, given the fact that if you look at Lebanon possibly being the next position where we may have a war as ISIS was shifting its operations from Syria into Lebanon as it was pivoting towards the West, that gave an opportunity with what happened with the strike for us to send a clear message that U.S. is not back in the negotiations in Syria and that we are have a say in shaping the future of Syria. I think that's beneficial both for Russia, U.S., and everybody involved in the discussions. What you see in the media may play out differently, but I think from a just a simple strategic negotiation standpoint, I think in the long run, it's much better for the U.S. and Russia and all the neighboring countries for this action to have taken place where U.S. is now negotiating from a position of strength.
Right before we went live, I asked you what you thought of the latest Syrian gas attack. And as you said, you know, I guess it doesn't matter right now. The former U.K. ambassador to Syria, Peter Ford, gave an interview, and he said it's the interventionist, like dogs returning to their own vomit, meaning they tried this in 2013, and then they continue to try. And we see this here with John McCain and Lindsey Graham, the right-wing warmongers, all got behind Trump yesterday, and it was kind of out of character for them. It seems like that they're trying to push this in a certain direction. Does the gas attack, do you have any idea or how this happened? Or I mean, we know no real evidence has come forth except some of the videos. There's not been, they said Assad did it, and the Department of Defense released a flight map. But beyond that, did you see a rush to judgment here to blame Assad?
Well, look, if you, we posted our article on Near East Center for Strategic Engagement, and it was on April 6th, actually, before the strikes against the airbase took place. And we were holding that article for a couple of days. But it really, one of the questions we asked was that, who actually is to blame for the attack? And we also went down and laid out all the nations. You know, Assad, for him to do so would make no sense, because one thing that we have to understand, Russia has such a strong footprint in Syria right now. They literally have created the hunter-killer teams to go after the ISIS operators in the region. For you to be able to have hunter-killer teams from the local community, you have to have deep roots in all these cities. So when Assad uses a chemical weapon somewhere, he cannot just use it specifically in an area where you have Russian operators are operating. It could actually kill them also. So it would be a negative for him to have used it. At the same time, if a chemical weapon was used, then as you see now, the blame goes back to the United States and the UN for not doing their job to begin with. But the Russians, who had all said that the chemical weapons were cleared out of Syria, it wouldn't help the Russians for such an attack to take place, because then, as you see now, Russia would be blamed for the fact that they're supporting a terrorist regime. At the same time, for this type of an attack to take place, really, frankly, the biggest benefit for us, United States, strategically, is that it brought us finally to the table of being able to negotiate from a position of strength. So we were already negotiating. We had met with the Russians and the Turks about what the future of Syria was going to be. But really, when this chemical attack took place, for whatever reason, whoever might have been responsible, and the way we laid it out in our article was maybe others were responsible for it, or certain groups that were not invited to the party, have not decided to use this platform or means to come to the party, almost like wedding crashers. So it gave us an opportunity to be able to not go in, strike not Syria really by hitting that airfield, by striking the Assad himself, striking an airfield that is close to the borders of Israel, Lebanon, which was being used, whether we liked it or not, to bring resupplies in. And a lot of people need to hark back to the Israeli attack that took place in Syria just a month ago, which it took out a lot of major supplies that were coming in. Those supplies were actually coming in from North Korea to supply forces on the ground. So while you have the Chinese leadership here in Florida, meeting with the United States, not only did that strike send a message to him, it sent a message to North Korea, it sent a message to Russia, it sent a message to Iran, it sent a message to Jordan, Egypt, Israel, Lebanon, and it sent a message to all the other countries and actors in the region. So I'm not going to say who did it, but
Mr. Sangari, I don't know if you can hear us, but hold on a second. You got cut off.
We have an audio issue. Yeah, we're getting the audio back. Just stand by, just momentarily. We're speaking to Sargas Sangari. And folks, if you have not read the article, NEC-SE.com, that is NEC-SE.com, chemical attack in Syria, who's to blame? That's from April 6th, from yesterday. Go ahead.
Do we have you back, Mr. Sangari?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, now we can.
Okay. Good to go.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter. I mean, it was an attack that happened. It's unfortunate, but at least for us, it gave us an opportunity to hit the target that references back to the regime.
Do you think that this tactical strike, was something that the administration had planned even before the chemical attack happened, and was just looking for a reason to
looking
flex
for a
their
reason
muscle?
And a target, perhaps? Yeah. You know,
I don't look at it from a position where everything was planned to include this attack in order for us to be able to conduct this attack. What happened was, you know, Trump won the presidency. When he won, he came in and he basically told Putin that this is what I want to do. And part of what we have to do coordination-wise in Syria, because there's so many aircraft flying, on any given day you can have five different countries flying on the radar screen. And I don't know if your viewers are aware of this or not, even North Korea has flown their aircrafts there for training purposes so their pilots can get some training, and that's a call that China made. And the North Korean relationship with the Syrian government goes back to when North Korea was trying to sell nuclear technology to the Syrian government, which led to the attack by the Israeli forces against the Syrian nuclear facility in September 6th of 2007. They've had this relationship, was going back to even 2001, you know, for 6 years without Israel knowing that North Korea and Syria were planning on building a nuclear facility in Syria itself. So all these things are tied. That's what we tried to teach, link analysis in the region. The area was getting dangerous. ISIS was maneuvering towards Lebanon, which was going to destabilize Lebanon, which was going to force, as I had said last year on your show, possibly with Israel maybe having to go back into southern Lebanon. All these factors tying into each other would tell me that if I was the president or his advisor, I would say, sir, make sure you sit and tell President Putin with no uncertain terms that you have a plan for the region and what that plan is. And for us to go in and conduct a strike in Syria, one thing that you have to do on a technical level is that the friendly aircrafts have to be able to be identified based on their pingers. What does that mean? That means when I fly an American aircraft or if I fly a Russian aircraft, U.S. systems and the Russian systems have to be able to identify those aircraft. So that means that you have to have gotten to a point where you exchange this information with the Russians giving it to us and us giving it to them for us to be able to deconflict the battle space. So in that capacity, of course they had talked to each other. Of course they had put out their feelers out there. Now, if you want to say that when Secretary of State Tolson came out and said that, you know, we're not going to do a regime change, and maybe it was a strike that was taking place by the Syrian government. Maybe he took the bait and decided to, you know, embolden himself by attacking his enemies using sarin gas, and that's on him. Nobody told him to take the bait. If you do it, then you're not a good leader for your nation to begin with. So we're in a position now, at least if the change does take place, and it will take place, Russians and Iranians never wanted Assad into place anyway. Eventually, when peace comes to Syria and all wars end on the peace table anyway, what will happen is at least now U.S. has set the stage that they had a say in who should come in and rule over Syria in the future. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. I guess trying to analyze more than what's necessary here. So moving forward into what happens from here, we know Russia has a very strong presence, as you just described, the Hunter, what was it, the Hunter?
Hunter killer teams.
And that we know that the number of cities they've pushed ISIS back, and ISIS is coming from a weaker position. What more do you think it will take to terminate ISIS in the region, to do what Donald Trump said is to wipe out the radical Islamic terror? I know we can never really wipe it out, but at least end the civil war. Do you see the possibility now that even maybe the U.S. and Russia come together to accomplish the mission of peace in Syria? Or do you think this is going to drag out a lot longer?
As I said, all wars end up at the negotiation table at the end, regardless. World War One, World War Two, even World War Three, if it happens in the future, will end up at the negotiating tables one of these days. But I think this is a good first process because, like I said, 3 weeks ago, I told you guys, I said, I have no clue what our plan is for Syria. As of yesterday, I know exactly what our plan is now. And I know that U.S. is not negotiating from a position of strength. Because what that tactical strike did, it did not go after Syria. We weren't attacking Syria. We were attacking the Assad regime. If he wanted to attack Syria, we should have knocked out every single aircraft throughout the entire area of operation, and knocked out all their air bases. And I think that sent a pretty clear message to Russia that we're not here in Syria as a secondary on the negotiation tables. Now we are on the equal basis at the table as equal partners going forward in these negotiations. And now it gives an opportunity possibly to build towards a faster peaceful resolution, because prior to that, what happened in Homs with all the killing that took place, it was literally to eradicate the Sunni majority and replace them with the Alawites. And they were basically killing human beings to replace them with another sect. And that is not something that we can allow or let it happen within the new reset of what's going to happen in the region for the next 100 years. And this is a new Sykes-Picot, and U.S. and Russia are in charge of it. Before, it used to be the French and the British 100 years ago.
Colonel, if I can ask this in a broader sense, and I just want to say, thank you again for taking your time out for appearing with us, because this is an important subject that's on everyone's minds. But compare yourself where you are at, if you don't mind. Breitbart did an article on you. You're the Assyrian army in dire need of course, military support from the United States. That was back on November 10th, 2015. Compare yourself or your position from November 2015 to now, April 2017, if you don't mind, both good and bad improvements and, or whatever you might need for improvement in terms of help from the United States and from the American people.
November 2015, we were holding the forward line of troops. We had foreign fighters that were also within our ranks, all of them special capable units. We had individuals from Scotland, France, Australia, Brazil, every possible country you can imagine, and some countries that I cannot mention because of security reasons. But any country that you can imagine, we had both males and females working with the Assyrian army ranks. We were holding the forward line of troops. Since then, you know, the foreign fighters haven't been there, because what happened was after the Assyrian Nineveh plain got cleared, the Kurdish regional government did not allow any foreign fighters that were fighting with our type of a force to be in on the ground. I did not have authorization to risk those guys' lives, because every time an individual who's a volunteer gets killed, it puts a burden on U.S. systems, whether it be our special forces who would have to go retrieve them, or our basically political systems to have to deal with the issue. Now, we pulled those individuals up. We've transitioned from being an army that you'll see on the battlefield a lot to a more of a unconventional warfare type of an army, because right now I cannot even stand around various different checkpoints on a certain type of plane. If I do, they're going to kill me, because everybody has plugged me in. Both the Sunni Muslim Kurds know my location, the Shia know my location, the Sunni know my location. I'm guarding garbage. So from that perspective, we transition our guys mostly off the battlefield, and today's fight in a certain type of plane, you have to have three uniforms. One uniform must be a Kurdish Peshmerga uniform, another one has to be an Iraqi army uniform, and another one has to be an ISIS uniform if you want to mull around the battlefield. If you put anything that says I'm an Assyrian Christian, Assyrian army fighter here, you're going to get shot. And it could be from any of the three individuals I just mentioned to you. And we just got the word today that in Karakush, which is an Assyrian village, which was really untouched by ISIS because of all the efforts that we and other militias on the ground had done, and the Assyrian army in particular, everybody who was captured during the clearing operations that was turned over to the Kurdish regional government of being a ISIS fighter or supporter are being let go. They're not just being let go, they're being let go with money in their pockets. What does that do? That puts the ISIS guy who's been defeated on a battlefield back into the general public again as a catch-release program. Why is that happening? That's happening because the Kurdish regional government is taking steps now to try to, after the Mosul fight, separate and establish their own territory, Kurdistan, they call it. And part of what they want to have in that Kurdistan is what they've already designated, which is a Syrian name of plains, which is a Syrian homelands. And by releasing these guys into the system, not only are they agitating the Sunnis against the Shia, which you're going to see Shia and Sunnis killing each other again, possibly in these Assyrian villages. And it also affects the Christians by the fact that they cannot go back to their villages because there's no security. So when we say we're going to kill ISIS on a battlefield, as I said last time we were talking on the interview, I could have done that. You could have given me $500,000. I could have probably taken all of Assyrian Emma plane today, and you would have had a American footprint with a joint operations center with U.S. Special Forces sitting in the middle of a Suriname plane. But nobody wanted to help at that time, and still they're hesitant to help the Assyrian Christians. Why? Because we're Assyrian Christians. We are not Sunni Muslim Kurds, we are not Sunni Arabs, and we're not Shia Arabs. With that said, I think if you have an Assyrian footprint in their own historical nation, you have a ability to transition that entire region, to bring it to a functional peace. The problem is, all I could do is say that to the politicians. They don't consult with me when they make a decision to go support al-Nusra Front or give money to bad actors, or in this case, give money to individuals. Say, well, there's a different type of a Sunni Muslim than that guy. This one has females who are in their military ranks. These guys don't. Iran used to be a free nation. Girls used to wear miniskirts in Iran. Take a look at it today. Don't be surprised if one day your Kurdistan becomes an Iranian Islamic Republic as it is today. Those things happen. But if you give an opportunity to save these safe havens of these ethnic cities, whether it be the Assyrians or the Yazidis who are going through a genocide, you don't have to worry about ISIS melting into the public. I can go find the guy because I've lived with him. He's been my next door neighbor. We showed a video of a teacher whose house was burned by the same students who he taught and raised in school and kept in his house because they didn't have a house to live in. Why did they burn his house? He was a Christian. They were Muslim. Arabs, okay? But he raised them. He knows where they are. Look at it this way. Everybody in the projects of Chicago knows where the bad guys are, where the drug dealers are, where all the corrupt people are, okay? How come the police in Chicago can't find him? Because nobody trusts the police. Okay? Nobody trusts the Kurdish, Sunni, Muslim Kurds to administer their area. Nobody trusts the Sunni Arabs to administer their area if they're not from his ethnicity. And nobody trusts the Shia Arabs to administer their area if they're not from his ethnicity or her ethnicity. So if you give the Assyrian an opportunity to, in this genocide, who have bled and established Iraq, to hold their footprint, you have a partner that can fight for you. You don't have to go in and try to introduce U.S. Marines on the ground to do the fighting for you. You could just give them the support, and they'll tell you, stay out, we got it. And now you have another partner, just like you have Israel in the region. What else you want for that region?
Mr. Sangari, we only got about 40 seconds left. I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight and shedding some light on the situation. Tell folks how they can help you and where to find you.
For us, if you support us through United Assyrian Appeal, again, United Assyrian Appeal, every dollar helps, and hopefully United States can step in, take over the mission, so we don't have to use United Assyrian Appeal to support the military families.
And we just got some correspondence today saying, here is $50 for United Assyrian Appeal. Interesting timing, I thought. Colonel, we are going to support you. We urge everyone out there to support you. A link will be in our program description. God bless you. Stay safe. Thanks for the explanation. What an incredible explanation.
Thank you, guys. God bless.
Thank you, sir.
Have a great evening. We'll be right back with Dr. Ted Brewer after this. Don't go anywhere.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back. In a thrilling series of novels, T.C. Joseph takes us into the lives of three families who struggle to maintain normal lives in a world where conspiracy theory and Bible prophecy collide. T.C. Joseph's viewpoint of alternative history and understanding of prophetic events will change your view of the world and the events on our horizon. Kirkus Review states, readers of end times fiction will be hard-pressed to find it done more intriguingly than this. Extremely readable and fast-paced. Blue Wink Reviews boldly states, fans of Tim LaHaye's Left Behind series and Tom Parada's The Leftovers will find this thought-provoking series absolutely riveting. Order your copies of T.C. Joseph's This Generation series from Amazon.com. Book 1, Precipice. Book 2, Pentecost. And Book 3, Penance.
In these uncertain times, it makes sense to have a sustainable backup method to cook food and boil water. If your current plan includes using a fuel-burning stove or cooking over an open fire, then there's a much better way. The Minuteman Rocket Stove is a biomass-burning cooking stove that only requires small quantities of sticks and twigs for fuel. The Minuteman Stove is easy to use, smokeless, portable, powerful, and sustainable. For the finest in survival cooking stoves and fire starters made right here in the USA, go to MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden. Exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
Well, he was, I guess he's trying to make a point. So I guess if he did that, if he was doing this for an exclamation.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. So thankful that you're joining us. Thank you so much for joining us and being part of our program. My goodness, it looks like I've got a fork sticking out of the back of my neck. What's that about?
Huh? It's just the way your headpiece is sitting there.
Anyway, we've got a fantastic program lineup for you, Dr. Ted Brower, healthmasters.com. But he's more than Dr. Ted Brower. He analyzes the current geopolitical events. He's got a show on Global Star Radio Network before ours, after ours as well. It repeats after ours, and he's got a listen in line as well. Dr. Ted Brower, visit healthmasters.com. And he's a good friend of the program. By the way, he's got some excellent products, of course. If you're not taking a multiple vitamin as a supplement right now, you got to, okay? And the best, of course, is from Health Masters Ultimate Multiple. We take it here at the studio. It's required. Everyone that enters the studio, Ultimate Multiple. And of course, he's got a newer product. I shouldn't say brand new. That's a cortisol buster. De-stresses you while, levels you out. And this is a great product, a great supplement, and other products as well. That's healthmasters.com, Dr. Ted Brower. And I just want to thank him for being a friend of the show and certainly knowledgeable about current geopolitical, current events in the, geopolitical realm. Got some, news since you've been on. Dr. Ted Brower, what's going on?
Well, hey, Doug, it's interesting because, you know, there are a lot of different takes on what Trump has done as far as this attack in Syria. And from a strategic standpoint, if he's going to attack Syria, since this was the airbase that was basically slated for destruction with the last chemical weapons attack, they never destroyed it. And he told everybody pretty much he was going to do it as a gesture of, hey, I've got some power here. I'm going to move on this. Okay, I got that. But as far as going into some type of protracted engagement into Syria and sending ground troops into there, I think it's going to be a horrible, horrible mistake. In fact, Senator Rand Paul, he opposed Trump for doing this whatsoever. And let me read a couple articles real quick. He said that while we all condemn the atrocities in Syria, the United States was not attacked. The president needs congressional authorization for military action as required by the Constitution. And I call on him to come to Congress for proper debate, said Paul, who ran for the 2016 Republican nomination against Trump. What's interesting to me about all of this stuff is I always like to go into the esoteric part of this. You know, it was 100 years to the day yesterday when we did this that we went into World War One. Did you know that, Doug?
I saw that yesterday.
Yeah, I did, actually.
100 years to the day. I mean, today, April the 6th, 1917, and 100 years.
You know what's interesting, Ted, is was it yesterday morning, I think it was 8 o'clock in the morning, the History Channel ran an hour, two-hour special on the chemical weapons usage history in World War One, from flamethrowers to the chlorine gas attacks. I found it very informative. I really didn't know a lot about that, but I don't know if they did that in response to what was in the news with the Syrian chemical attacks, or that's something they had planned, but it was informative.
Well, you know, this whole thing's interesting to me because, remember, sarin nerve gas was developed in 1938 by the Nazis. It was developed as a pesticide. And it's fluorine gas is what it is. The active component is fluorine. The same stuff they put in the water, the same stuff they put in your toothpaste, a different compound of fluorine, but nevertheless it's still the active component, which is fluorine, which is always toxic. And the interesting thing about this is a very strong biohazard. If you get it on your skin, it go up right up the nerve roots, and it'll cause paralysis within minutes, and there's vomiting, etc. It's about 20, 30, 40 times more toxic than cyanide. It's really some poisonous stuff. And what was also interesting about this, the Germans had stockpiled thousands of tons of this during and beginning of World War II, and they never used any of it, which I always thought that was interesting. And, you know, Jim Mars also says he has no idea how Germany lost World War II because they could have fluorine gassed the entire group of people coming in from the Atlantic and Normandy, and they could have just pretty much killed all those troops, but Hitler never released that. Also, we don't know if it was really fluorine gas that was used, because the folks that were working with these children were using unprotected gear. They were using their bare hands. Some of them had masks on. Some of them didn't have masks on. They were picking up and messing with the bodies without the fluorine on them. Now, fluorine gas does have a very quick evaporation point, but just a few drops of fluorine gas like that, the liquid component of that, on your hand, you're going to be dead within a few minutes. I mean, it's that poisonous. And I found it interesting that there was no weapons inspection done over there. Nobody went over there to examine the corpses to see if they had indeed died of fluorine gas exposure, or sarin nerve gas, which we call it today. None of this. I mean, you know, we don't know if atrophine had been dispensed or used in that for the agent. We don't know. So what I'm saying is this. We don't know who in the world did this. Assad really wouldn't have any reason to do that. He was winning the civil war. And the thing with Trump is this. The Treaty of Espala, which is over 400 years ago now, it basically said that another nation can't enter into a nation's civil war conflict. And which is exactly what we did yesterday. I mean, this is something that's going on between Assad, his rebels. Russia said it was a sarin gas, basically, the depot there that had been hit, that had exploded and caused all of this. But we don't even know if it was sarin gas. So a lot of things happened really, really quickly that I don't really care for. I think Trump should have been a little bit more careful before he starts sending in 59 Tomahawk cruise missiles. Now, mind you, they destroyed an old base, but they did kill some people. I mean, that's not good, but the air runways weren't damaged, which I thought was kind of interesting about how that happened. And, you know, and we've got to go back to the beginning. Let's talk about this for a few minutes. Zoran Paul said that there was a zero chance that Assad was behind the chemical weapons attack in Syria. And basically what he said is that he has absolutely no reason to have done this. It doesn't make any sense for Assad under these conditions to have all of a sudden used poison gas. I think there's a zero chance that he would have done this deliberately. It looks like somebody maybe didn't like what was going on over there, so there had to be an episode. In fact, he's basically saying it's a false flag. It's the neoconservatives who are benefiting tremendously from this because it derailed the process that had already been moving forward on a peaceful settlement in Syria. This is what Ron Paul said about what happened. Something is not adding up to the sarin gas. Another article says that in one picture, the white hats, helmets, were handling the corpses of dead people without sufficient safety gear, most particularly with masks mostly used and no gloves. Within seconds of exposure to sarin, the effects of the gas begin to target the muscle and nervous system. And this is always, also does it topically. You don't have to inhale it. There's almost an immediate release of the bowels and bladder, which we didn't see that. We saw some types of people that were having, having seizures, but we don't know exactly what they were dying of, Doug.
Number one, I agree with you. And everything I looked at, I don't trust one bit of footage, any footage that we see on the mainstream media. I don't trust any of that.
Nope.
And you're absolutely correct that they lack the biohazard suits, the gloves. Eric the Tech was just saying, you know, what about that video that we all have seen of the hose hosing off of the child?
And not to mention the hero doctor, Shajul Islam, is facing terrorism charges for kidnapping and torturing two British journalists, and had his medical license pulled. He's being promoted as the hero, you know, hero doctor, who has time to give, you know, mainstream media interviews while treating these patients, and that's very suspicious as well.
Yeah, so you're 100% right. I think what we're looking at here, the phrase false flag, Ted, I think is an interesting phrase, but perhaps wag the dog might be more applicable here.
Well, I mean, if the USS Cole wasn't in the history books, you know, and all the stuff that's happened over there, you know, and with the whole mess that happened with, you know, all over the world already with these false flags. I mean, you know, was it the Cole? Was it the Cole that was the Gulf of Tonkin? What was the ship on the Gulf of Tonkin that got attacked supposedly, Doug? Do you remember
that? The Liberty?
The Liberty, yeah.
Okay.
And because I think the Cole was the one they used for the,
The Cole was in 99 in Yemen.
That's right. And so we have all of these crazy things happening on an ongoing basis. And the sad part about it is that, you know, we need to start, before we start sending in missiles to bomb countries, we just kind of need to think through this. I mean, we hired Trump as the peace president. I mean, he told us he didn't want to attack Syria. He didn't want to attack Assad. In fact, it was just a few years. I mean, let me read you, I'll read you his own quote that he said. He said that, which I think is interesting because he said just a few years ago that if Obama attacked Syria, it would engage us in another war in the Middle East, another useless war that we've made, having no benefit from whatsoever, and that, you know, it was just going to be a big, big, big mess. And now he turns around and he does this, but of course, here, I've got the exact quote. Just say no. This is an article by Paul Joseph Watson, by the way, who's excellent. He says, just say no, Trump being pressured by neocons to attack Syria. He goes, while the president now reportedly considered military action in Syria, which now we know he did. Donald Trump needs to take his own advice from 4 years ago when he ran a series of tweets when Trump warned Obama about the insanity of attempting to topple yet another Middle Eastern country with Assad before the chemical attacks even had been investigated, and with previous incidents having been carried out by jihadist rebels. Trump is signaling that it may be about to embroil the U.S. into another potential Middle Eastern quagmire. President Trump has told some members of Congress that he is considering military action in serious retaliation. This completely contradicts Trump's attitude towards Syria just 4 years ago, faced with the exact same situation. Barack Obama seemed to be on the verge of attempting regime change. And then on September the 5th, 2013, all caps, Trump yelled, again to our very foolish leader, do not attack Syria. If you do, very bad things will happen, and from that, the U.S. gets nothing. And then he said again, don't attack Syria, an attack that will bring nothing but trouble for the U.S. Focus on making our country strong again and great again. This is what Trump was saying 3 or 4 years ago. And you see the article here from Paul Joseph Watson. I'm not, you know, making this stuff. You guys can look it up. And so I don't understand what the great change of thing was with this. I know Bannon left. I also know that Kushner went to the Middle East just this past week and went with the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and who knows why. The problem I have with Kushner, and I've mentioned him on the show before, and now a lot of other people are always talking to about him, is that he basically is a Democrat. And I mean, he's given huge amounts of money to Democratic functions. His father was put in prison, as we know, by Governor Christie when he was still prosecutor in New Jersey. And that's what kind of a payback was when, you know, when Kushner was put into the Trump administration and Christie was, they had thought about bringing him in as a, you look this up, as a vice presidential candidate, and they all, and the news basically carried there was going to be a payback that Kushner had pretty much stopped the nomination or the vice presidency of Governor Christie. Now, whether there are other factors involved, I'm sure there were, but there's been a lot of bad blood there going on between these two families already because, you know, Christie's the one who put Kushner's dad in prison. So it's kind of crazy when you stop and you look at what's going on with Kushner being a member of Shabbat. And we know that Shabbat has been linked. That's a Jewish sect. And we know that they've been linked to the Mossad. And now we see that Kushner, who is an unelected official, Doug, I'm not even sure what type of vetting he's gone through as far as security clearances. I mean, who in the world knows? I mean, he's the son-in-law of Trump. And, you know, why in the world he's an unelected official, you know, and I'm not saying he's not competent. I'm just saying there's a lot of questionable things going on with his background with George Soros, with that $259 million loan for Cadre Developments. You know, we talked on this on your show, I think, 5 or 6 weeks ago. And it's just getting more and more. And I'm seeing more and more people starting to question why Kushner's in the White House and why he's involved in all of this stuff. In fact, Les Stranahan said the ideological coup by Kushner linked Goldman Sachs globalist is destroying the Trump White House. He goes on to say after WikiLeaks revelations that Citigroup attacked Obama's cabinet, it appears that Trump administration is succumbing to the same globalism from a different bank. And all this again is Goldman Sachs. Weeks after the Daily Mail exposed an internal struggle between Kushner-linked Goldman Sachs operatives and Trump advisor Steve Bannon, it's become clear that an ideological group led by the globalist bankers is well underway, claiming populist Steve Bannon as their latest victim. This ties with Roger Stone's warning that Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, has been linking anti-Bannon information to MSNBC Joe Scarborough. Well, it appears the Goldman Sachs globalists have won for now. Wednesday evening, former Breitbart lead investigator reporter Stranahan dropped an insightful Periscope video in which he laid out exactly what's going on at the White House, pointing out who's running the show and imploring the people to simply research the players for themselves. In a nutshell, weeks after meeting with Goldman Sachs CEO Lloyd Blankfein at the Four Seasons Bar in D.C., Jared Kushner, friendly Goldman alums, have successfully maneuvered Trump's top senior advisor, Steve Bannon, off the National Security Council, further strengthening the globalist cabal's influence over Donald Trump. Jared Kushner, should be pointed out, has a well-documented history of donating to Democrats, including Hillary Clinton, Chuck Schumer, and Robert Mendez. And he goes on to say, let's look at the other ex-Goldman operators within Trump's White House. Gary Cohn, recently Goldman's number two, is Trump's chief economic advisor, who was granted an unprecedented accelerated payout of $285 million in order to work at the White House. Diana Habib Powell, another top Goldman alum and former president of the Goldman Sachs Foundation, promoted deputy national security advisor on March the 15th. Instead of draining the swamp, according to this author, alums like Colin Powell and Treasury Secretary Mnuchin are also from Goldman Sachs. They are the swamp. So I want to know if Goldman Sachs has taken over. This author's asking the same thing here. Has Goldman Sachs taken over because we've never voted for the folks from Goldman Sachs, and suddenly they're all over the White House? And what's also interesting, we have to understand, Doug, and we've done shows with you on this, you know, we have to look back at the Balfour Declaration, and we have to look at who runs Israel. We realize that the international banking cartel, the Rothschilds, are the ones who wanted Israel as a nation state. We also know that Israel's primarily just a fiefdom of the Rothschild Empire. We know that. And we also know that the Rothschilds control almost every central bank in the world. We know that. We know Israel's been very, very, how should I say, aggressive in the Middle East as far as ensuring its own border security. In fact, here's an article that was written by the New York Times. It's interesting. It says, Israel, not Hezbollah in Lebanon or Hamas in Gaza, nor the government of President Assad in Syria, is provoking the next war. It's saying Israel is. Counterintuitive though it may be to Israel and most Western minds, Israel is not its militant Islamic or brutal Syrian enemies is the aggressor of these border wars. This is from the New York Times. And it says the Times has more interesting to say. It says Israel is continually attacking Syria, at times killing Syrians and Hezbollah members, even though they're not attacking Israel. They don't care. They don't dare bomb Israel because of the weapons depot. They don't dare bomb Israeli weapons depots or go after Israeli military figures because Israel is far too strong for that. So we've got some crazy things going on. Since we know that the Goldman Sachs pretty much owns, or is owned by the Rothschild banking cartel because they're part of the Federal Reserve System, and we now know that basically Israel is a fiefdom of the Rothschild Empire through the Balfour Declaration, which, just do your own history on that. I'm not being mean or anything, it's just what it is. We now know that Israel's calling a lot of shots in the global, and now even the New York Times is calling this out. We need to take a closer look at this and see how much of the international bankers are actually involved in this, because we didn't put Donald Trump in for him to allow international banking to come back in and run the White House like it did under Bush, under Clinton, under all these other presidents, under Obama. It's kind of nuts.
But every war is a banker war, Ted. I mean.
Yeah, I know, but nobody wants to talk about this stuff. Everybody just wants to talk about, well, how many bombs did they drop or how many missiles did they send in? We have to ask ourselves a question. Why is this happening? Who's in charge of this? You know, are these Sabbatean Kabbalists that are involved in all of this Luciferian worship and this child sacrifice and pedophilia, are they the ones involved in this? Are they the ones that are still in charge? I mean, how much of this does Trump know? How much of this Trump is willing to work with? And how much of it is he trying to do as far as changing our country itself? Because getting ourselves into another protracted war in Syria or in the Middle East doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. I mean, when Trump came into office, and I'm still supporting Trump, and I heavily supported Trump. You know, it was, you know, everybody wanted him to lock up Hillary. I haven't seen any progress on that. I don't know what's going on with the pedo-gate in Washington. I know 1,500 pedophiles have been arrested around the United States since he took power. I understand that. But, I mean, we don't see a border wall, which we kind of really don't need anyhow. We need to have some troops there and surveil it by drones. We do know that the illegal immigration is down because of basically people are scared to come to the United States. But it's like Ron Paul said, if you really want to stop the illegals from coming into the United States, stop giving them free stuff when they get here.
That's right.
How about getting rid of the Johnson Amendment, Doug? I haven't seen anything like that from. I mean, there's a lot of things that just simply aren't happening, and maybe a lot of us who are patriots are just waiting or hoping he's doing things more quickly than he's going to do, because you know he has 4 years in the White House to try to get some of these agendas done. But the problem is, you know, some of these things are pretty big deals as far as going out attacking other Middle Eastern countries when we basically elected him not to do this again and not to. Now the Pentagon is saying they're not going to tell us what the troop strength is in Syria and they're not going to give those numbers out anymore. I mean, I don't understand any of this stuff. No, so I don't know, Doug. Maybe you can help me with it.
Well, I think you are correct. First of all, we are attempting to get at the truth. It doesn't matter. Donald Trump, I mean, we elected Donald Trump. He's in office. Well, let me reverse the course on this and ask you a question. Given the circumstances, let's say Obama was still in the White House this week, up to noon yesterday, we'll say. What do you think his response would have been to that chemical weapons attack, if anything? Or where do you think we would have been?
Well, we already saw what he did with Libya. I mean, we have to go by what he's already done. We have to already look at what happened in Egypt. I mean, we've got to look at all this disaster that he caused. I'm sure he probably would have done the same thing if he hadn't sent troops in. I mean, Hillary would already had probably 10,000 troops over there. You know, I mean, so I think Trump's trying to do some type of, you know, mitigated response. I think he's trying to, you know, not go completely berserk. That's why he told pretty much everybody he was fixing to bomb that airbase, get everybody out of there so he'd have much lower casualties. But the reality is this. Is he just flexing his muscles to show that he's willing to do that? Maybe so. Okay. If he's willing to do that, okay, but they still had people die over there, and he still attacked the foreign country, which is directly against the Treaty of Westphalia. He did not go to Congress to get the authority to do this. And the problem is we've had all of these. I mean, why is this? Why do all of these people, we got Bush, we've got Clinton, we've got Bush, we've got Obama, and now we've got Trump bombing the Middle East. Really? I mean, does everybody have to bomb the Middle East? And that's the reason we're creating all these refugees and these crises, because we keep bombing Syria, keep bombing all these places in the Middle East. They're all flooding into Europe, which, of course, is what the globalist plan is to basically dilute the population in Europe and to bring it into a Muslim caliphate to pretty much get rid of nationalism. And that's exactly what their plan is as far as bringing them into the United States, to dilute the patriots in the United States, and hopefully create a civil war over here for martial law. That's what I believe their plan is, not to mention the depopulation agenda that they're involved in, Doug, with the chemtrails, with the fluoride. I mean, remember, sarin gas is fluoride. It's fluorine gas. They're putting fluoride in our food. They're putting fluoride in our... I mean, Prozac is fluoride, for heaven's sakes. I've talked about it on the show before.
Yep.
I mean, all of these things are going on right now, but there's nothing to see here. Let's just kind of move everything over here, and let's just send it a bunch of missiles. But now what it has done, you know, now the mainstream media has stopped attacking Trump the last few days, and they're saying, oh, he's doing strong things, he's doing this and that. Well, they're controlled by the gold globalists, too, and they're controlled by Goldman Sachs, too, because remember, the Federal Reserve Bank, printed tens of trillions of dollars in off-book balance sheets and proceeded to buy up almost the entire Fortune 500 corporation, you know, with their you know, through interlocking corporate directorships and what they did as far as stock purchases. I mean, we saw all of this happen in the last 10 or 12 years. Now, the nuttiest part about this is that Trump is putting someone into the FDA. His name is, Gottlieb. And he used to work for all these major pharmaceutical corporations, and now he's got ties to like 20 different ones in which he promotes their products and their drugs all over the place, and he's got millions of dollars of speaking fees from who he's spoken for these corporations promoting the drugs. Now, we're talking all kinds of drugs. We're talking statin drugs, which cause people to get unbelievably stupid. They're not even necessary. They cause heart disease. They cause diabetes. They cause cancer. They cause hardening of the arteries. Statin drugs are one of the worst drugs you can put in your body. So we've got a guy who promotes all of these drugs. Now he's going to be the head of the Food and Drug Administration. Really? Really? I mean, he was an investment banker and analyst to start with before he went into medical school. I mean, these are the guys that Trump's surrounding himself with, Doug, and so we have to ask ourselves a question, why? Now, I'm not throwing the towel in with Trump. I'm still in his corner. I'm still saying, okay, all right. Now, if he starts running huge amounts of troops into the Middle East, causing more and more chaos and, you know, over there, I'm going to have a hard time supporting the guy because, you know, I told everybody when we were supporting him back in the fall, if he decides to start doing crazy things like the rest of these guys have done, I'm no longer going to say I'm endorsing Donald Trump. I'm going to start talking about him as the way we talked about Hillary, Obama, and the rest of them. I just want to know, really, why Kushner, who is a member of Shabbat and has donated hundreds of thousands of dollars to Shabbat, which is a known Mossad front, is in the White House with him. What type of vetting was done to ensure that he was okay with his security clearances, and why he's going with the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff into the Middle East last week. None of that makes any sense. And immediately thereafter, we have a gas attack. None of this stuff makes any sense. And I'm just asking questions. I'm not drawing any conclusions on any of this stuff. All I'm saying is that we've got one of the top FDA drug insiders about to come head of the FDA. He already worked with the FDA under George Bush. I haven't seen a lot of the Kennedy. When Kennedy was put in to take care of the vaccines and try to do a big investigation on the vaccines, many of his lectures now have been canceled and have been basically scrapped that he was doing, trying to show people what's going on. And just in the meantime, let me just say this real quick. Everybody needs to order a copy. It's $10 or whatever of the movie Vaxxed, V-A-X-X-E-D. It's available online now, and everybody needs to see that. And if you understand what Kennedy's trying to do, you'll understand it even more effectively and efficiently, and understand it a lot better from an emotional standpoint if you watch that movie, Vax. It's critical that you guys see it. But all I'm doing is this. With your audience, and I do this with my audience every day when I do my show from 3 to 4 live, and it appears every night with you guys after your show on Global Star. It appears, if you're on Global Star right now, it appears, it just, let's continue listening, it comes on next. And here's what I've learned is this. I like to ask a lot of questions. I don't try to draw conclusions. It's kind of like practicing, or it's kind of like preaching morality. I try not to preach morality anymore, though I do it every once in a while. I try to preach consequences. And the consequences of attacking another Middle Eastern country are bad. There's nothing, there is no upside as far as I'm concerned to doing any of this. I thought we were bringing troops home. But remember, a lot of this has to do, and we talked about in detail today, with in 2009 when Assad was asked to run that Qatar pipeline through his country, through Turkey, into Europe. And he said no. And right after that, if you go to Wikipedia, it'll tell you this. The CIA started destabilizing Assad's country and blaming him of all these atrocities. I believe the guy's just another victim of another regime change by our CIA, which in its own way is bringing in hundreds of billions, if not $1 trillion worth of heroin out of Afghanistan every year. You know, on their 1,000 military bases around the country, they use as lily pads to hop their planes around to transfer the drugs, the guns, the children, and the human, and the organs. I mean, this is some crazy stuff that's going on all over the world, including the money laundering that's taking place. And so we've got this entire deep state that seems to be running everything right now in Washington, D.C. And remember, I said, Doug, on your show months ago, I said, we'll know if Trump's really in charge if, when he gets into office, the chemtrails stop, the geoengineering stops, and they stop spraying us like we're a bunch of lab rats. If they stop spraying us with all these things, who knows what. And we've talked about it in detail with Morgellons. We've talked about the barium. We've talked about the aluminum. We've talked about the strontium, how it ties into our central nervous system, how from our central nervous system, it basically incorporates itself in as a read-write unit with piezoelectric crystals, which are basically uplink transformers to transfer our energy field and our thoughts and our emotions into this giant D-wave computer they're trying to tie us all together with the G5, with the 5 series cell phone towers are going to be putting up. I mean, yep, and now 5G we know the
system.
The 5G. And Doug, we know they don't even know how this thing works, this D-Wave computer. They say it's like standing at the altar of an alien god, and it ties into an interdimensional interface. And my response is, what? I mean, how does that even work? And so all these crazy things are happening right now because we know that we've given control of our government over to the politicians. We know
Right up against the break, folks. We're talking with Dr. Ted Brewer. Healthmasters.com is the website. What's it? Hagman 10 is the code. Doug 10.
Doug 10. Hey,
and we'll talk about that more on the other side. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Greenovative. Go to HagmanReport.com. Click on the link to Greenovative. What Greenovative is, it's a small company in Florida. They created something called the G-Mag Power Cell. It produces electricity by adding salt water to this unit that recharges rechargeable batteries. It's the coolest thing you'll ever see in your life. It's really neat. Really a super device. All right, you need just 2 teaspoons of ordinary table salt, a little water, but a bing, you're charging your rechargeable batteries. Super G-Mag Chargeable is affordable, it's lightweight, weighs about 8 ounces, it's durable, it's EMP proof, and it's environmentally friendly, that it is. It'll provide safe and convenient power for recharging 6 AA batteries off the grid when other power sources aren't available anywhere, anytime, in any weather, day or night. Go to greeninnovative.com. That's greeninnovative.com. Folks, in these uncertain times, it just makes sense to have a sustainable backup method for accomplishing one of life's most important tasks, and that's preparing food. This is the way to go. There is nothing better than a Minuteman rocket stove from MinutemanStove.com. We all need a way to cook and a method to process water. I mean, think about it. Think about the many things that could happen to you. A Minuteman rocket stove can provide your family or group the perfect solution. It's small, lightweight, wood-burning, and every bit as powerful as a kitchen stove. It's smokeless, fully self-contained for clean storage and transport. Because it's so efficient, it cuts down on your wood gathering and processing chores to a tenth what would be required if cooking the old-fashioned way over an open fire. So don't rely on gas or fuel stoves. Prepare your family. Prepare for yourself. Order a Minuteman rocket stove today. It's going to make bad times much better. Folks, MinutemanStove.com. MinutemanStove.com. Need I say more?
You should have a Minuteman, the survival stove in an ammo can. For investors, timberland has become the symbol of safety. Global tropical timber demand continues to surge as the world's population increases. The need for managed, sustainable timber production forests has never been greater. When stock markets crash, trees keep growing. Direct ownership of fully managed tropical timberland acreage is now available to accredited investors. Prime, valuable hardwood groves close to the beautiful Costa Rican border generate and maintain superior long-term wealth. Consider visiting our forest plantations. Qualified accredited investors should go to PreciousTimberProfits.com or dial 855-888-6288 for more information. Call 855-888-6288 or visit PreciousTimberProfits.com. This announcement does not constitute either an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offering made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288, PreciousTimberProfits.com, PreciousTimberProfits.com.